Welcome back to the B-Fly and Dixie podcast featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, Inside Lacrosse analyst, and my old buddy, Mark Dixon. I am the host, Dan Flynn. Another terrific show on tap, including previews of this weekend's top 20 matchups, a few other major games, and an interview with Princeton head coach Matt Madelon. So, Dixie, let's get it. Destiny is all, Mark Dixon. Destiny is all.
Have you started watching?
Of course. I'm four episodes into it already.
Oh, wow. So
everyone, we were referring to one of my all-time favorite television shows. The Last Kingdom is back. The story of Uhtred and the formation of England as one nation under one God, under one language around like, 900 AD or something like that. Is the Netflix series season 5 finally came out. Their final season came out on March 9th, and I've already watched 4 episodes. It's great. Fantastic.
Unbelievable show. I can't wait to watch it. I was traveling earlier this week, and over the weekend, my wife and I started Inventing Anna, that show with Julie. I think her name is Julie Gardner, or Julia Gardner. She plays Ruth on Ozark. And she plays this socialite. And another one of the main characters or main actors in the series is Anna Chomsky. She was in the movie ages ago with Macaulay Culkin. I think it was called My Girl when they were both young. So, you know, it's a good show, but I feel like we need to watch that before we commence on Kingdom, Last Kingdom. I think the Inventing Anna has 9 episodes and we're through 3 of them. So my wife and I flip-flop between Succession and Dexter, New Blood, back in the fall. And I didn't like Succession as much this season. And I don't know if I didn't like it as much because it just has kind of gotten old or I wasn't that entertained with it, or because I really like Dexter, New Blood, and they're entirely different shows. That's Last Kingdom and Inventing Anna. So I figure it would only be fair to each show to, I know I'm going to love Last Kingdom, but it's only fair to Inventing Anna to finish that one first and then embark upon Uhtred of Battenborough.
So good. It's such a great show.
It is. Yeah. I'm sorry to see it end too. This is it, right?
Yes, but the good news is they are making a movie that they're filming right now. So there's going to be a movie that comes out after.
So that's similar to Ray Donovan, the Ray Donovan show on Showtime. When that ended, it had a few loose ends, and they had a movie. And I watched that about a month or two ago, and that was really good. Kind of tied, gave everything closure. So that's cool. Good.
I came upstairs to go to bed last night at like 11 something. My wife's like, what are you doing? Like, I thought you'd be up till 3 a.m. watching. I'm like, I fell asleep. I've already watched 4 episodes. She's like, you watched 4 episodes already. Like, I'm not even really sure, but I need to go back. I got to slow it down. There's 10 episodes in season 5. And I don't think I want to binge it all in like,
no, a couple of days. You got to savor it.
Yeah. I think I want to savor it a little bit and enjoy it instead of just plow through. Cause I've read all the books. I kind of know what's going to happen.
Oh, and,
you know, it's based on real history.
What's the book called? Or books? What are the books called? I'd like to read those.
I have them all. I'll give them to you. It's by Bernard Cornwell, and there's 13 books. So each season is based on 2 books.
Oh, neat. Okay. I'll have to read those. I got to give a shout out. I'm reading a book right now by a local author. When I say local, to the Maryland area, Richard Chismar. His son, Noah, is a freshman at the University of Virginia. He played with my son, Matt, on Crabs 2021 Club. Richard's book is Chasing the Boogeyman, which is a recount of some murders that took place in Richard's hometown of Edgewood back in the 80s. So it's I'm only a couple chapters in, but it's really, really good. Richard Chismar does the Gwendy character, like Gwendy's magic feather and Gwendy's. So anyway, good local author, local to me. So check Richard Chismar out if you're looking for a book, looking for a read.
That's cool. You like those unsolved mystery crime dramas.
I do. I know we've talked about the Unsolved Mystery show from back in the day with Robert Stack. I loved
those. But didn't you also, one of your favorite Netflix shows was the one about like some nuns or priests and
the keepers.
Yeah.
The keepers. Yeah.
I remember.
Yeah. See, the old Archbishop Teo High School. Yeah.
So speaking of destiny is all, we're working towards some teams winning a national championship on Memorial Day weekend. So let's get to the lacrosse, Dixie. I went down to see Princeton play Georgetown, and I brought my son Bennett. It was a nice day at Georgetown. It was a really high-level game. It felt like an NCAA quarterfinal type of game, maybe even a Final Four game.
Right.
The teams really – it was very high-level play. Princeton's really good, man. It kind of validated the way I felt about them. And I'll say it again, like those two teams in a lot of ways are kind of mirror images of each other. Really good goalie play, lots of defensemen that they can run at you, really athletic in the midfield. They get a good amount of their scoring can come from the midfield too. They're good defensive midfield. Princeton and Georgetown are similar in a lot of ways. And I was really happy. After not watching lacrosse games in college lacrosse games in person for a long time, like the last two games going to Maryland and then to Georgetown, I felt great. Like after the game, it felt like a really rewarding, it was just a great experience. Like Georgetown's a nice place to go to see a game. It was a warm day. The crowd was into it. They had a nice crowd there and the game was super high level. And my son and I had a great time at the game. And I got to see my sister and her family too. So it was
excellent.
I'm looking forward to the next one I can get to.
A little disappointed though. You came home empty handed with no treats for Mr. Dixon from your sister.
Yeah. Sorry.
Very disappointed.
Maybe next time.
Okay.
I think you got to go. We've talked about this. You got to show up.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
To the attendees, go to the spoils.
It's hard. If I'm not working, I'll be at Loyola games.
Hannah Flynn did not get a goodie bag this week either, but Bennett got another one. He got another survival bag.
Look at Bennett. Bennett's cleaning up.
All right, Dixie, we got to get right into it, man. There's a lot of games to preview. Plus, we have a new feature that we'll get to before the give and go. There are several top 20 matchups this weekend, plus some other key games of featuring a top 20 team and someone, you know, receiving votes, let's put it that way, that are a big kind of rivalry games or important games that I think are significant on the schedule. But there's one that on Thursday night that just ended. Virginia and Carolina faced off in an ACC tilt, and congratulations to the Virginia Cavaliers on a win you can hang your hat on.
Yeah, huge win.
All right, Dixie, the action starts on Saturday when number 4 Cornell, it's 4-0 now, take on Penn State. Penn State's rebounded from a couple of early losses. They'll tangle at noon in State College.
So when you look at these two teams, you know, big mystery. I guess you could might maybe say that there were a number of Ivy League teams that were going to be a mystery coming into 2022, and maybe no bigger than Cornell, new head coach, I should say, Connor Busick taking over for Peter Milliman. But this past weekend, Cornell at home defeated an Ohio State team that many thought, you know, outside of Virginia and Maryland, might be the hottest team in the country after their significant win over the University of North Carolina. And then they followed that up with a nice win over Harvard in Florida. But, you know, Cornell, it was a back and forth game, and Cornell just really dominated that fourth quarter to get the W. And then you've got a Penn State team that started really rocky. Three consecutive losses to Villanova, Vermont, and St. Joe's. They flipped the script with a nice win over Yale. And then they gave Penn everything that they could possibly handle this past weekend in Charlotte, North Carolina, losing on literally a last second goal. So, you know, this is a Penn State team that I think I've got them, you know, 20th, ranked 20th in my Inside Lacrosse media poll. I know a bunch of others have them on the outside looking in. Yes, you know, the three losses are significant. But when you beat Yale and then you've got a team like Penn that, you know, really has shown championship weekend caliber talent, I think that's significant. And so Penn State is finding a way to be competitive, and they have another tremendous opportunity this coming weekend. And obviously every time Penn State plays Cornell, you have to go with the subplot of Jeff Tambrotta used to be the coach of the Big Red. And this was a, remember, this was one of the last games that we had in 2020. I believe that game was played in North Carolina between Penn State and Cornell, with Cornell knocking off the Nittany Lions. I mean, that game was what, like 17-16, 18-17? It was ridiculous in scoring. I'm not sure that this game will reach that level of scoring, but it should be entertaining.
And again, a matchup of teams just outside of the top 25. Richmond Spiders are 3-2. They'll take on number 6 Georgetown, and suffered their first defeat. We talked about that. That game is at noon.
So you got a Georgetown team that was really rolling heavy, and they were handled. Not handled. They were upset. I mean, it's an upset, you know, for Princeton to go into D.C. and knock off the Hoyas, especially minus their best defender in George Bond. So, you know, this is a Georgetown team that's going to be looking to get back on track. And Richmond is a team that was down 9-1 to Towson on the road a couple weeks ago and came back to win that game in overtime. They played Duke tough last weekend. You know, this is a good matchup between Big East and SoCon, and a real opportunity. I mean, I look at the, you know, when you talk about opportunity, you always talk about opportunity whenever there's a game to be played. I mean, this is a chance for an opportunity for Richmond to get a really high quality win over a top 10 team. And this is an opportunity for Georgetown to rebound and get their feet back underneath of them after losing last week to Princeton.
A massive game in the Midwest, number 9, Notre Dame, 1-2 on the season, dropping their last two. We'll travel to Columbus to take on the number 10 Ohio State Buckeyes, also coming off a loss. So 4-1 now. That game's at 1:00.
That game will be on the Big Ten Network, so make sure you tune in. Ohio State losing up at Cornell last weekend. Again, it was the fourth quarter where the Big Red really separated themselves and got that win. And that's something that won't sit well with Nick Myers and his players, that they were, outperformed in the final 15 minutes of that game. And then you got Notre Dame, who played Maryland really, really tough, just came up a little bit short against the Terrapins. So, you know, again, two teams looking for an opportunity to rebound and get a significant win against the other. I think this game at this stage may be bigger for Notre Dame, just due to the fact they've got two losses. They've been a little bit more, you know, Ohio State's been, for all intents and purposes, and all due respect, a little bit of a surprise. Who would have thought that they could have, A, gone into Carolina to get a win, but B, done it in a 12-goal fashion? And then again, they handled that success a week later with a win at a neutral site against Harvard. So, Notre Dame, I think, is a team that might have a little bit more pressure on them right now to get this victory.
The monster game in the Midwest is not nearly as big as the battle for New Jersey, the Garden State battle for the Tots Maestral Cup, when number 3 Rutgers will travel to number 7 Princeton. Before we talk about that game, Dix, let's bring in our guest this week, Princeton head coach Matt Madlin. Our guest this week is Princeton head coach Matt Madlin, whose Tigers take on number 3 Rutgers this week. Coach Madlin, thanks for joining us on the Deflying Dixie podcast.
Happy to be here. Excited to talk on behalf of the Tigers.
Coach, thanks again for joining us. Really appreciate it. You know, Princeton lacrosse, that if there's one team, when you look back to the pandemic, that was really clicking and really playing at a high level, a lot of folks will point to the Princeton Tigers. And then that season obviously was shut down with the rest of the country. But then 2021, the Ivy Leagues didn't return either. What's it been like in 2022, being able to have the guys together? You're 4 games deep into the season. You've had some big games, and lacrosse is back at Princeton University.
Yeah, it's wild. We're really lucky. Obviously, we're back and running, and it's nice to see all Ivy League athletes back on the playing surfaces, you know, courts, pools, whatever it may be, fields, starting up this year. Definitely tough. Appreciate the kind words about 2020. That's an incredible group. We're thrilled to be able to honor that group coming up, you know, in this game this weekend. But, You know, it's been funny. It was a long 2 years. As a coaching staff, we had a lot of time to think, reevaluate, try to figure out systems. We thought we had it all figured out as guys returned to campus, figured out, we got this guy in this spot. We can move this guy around. And then when we started playing and practicing and scrimmaging, we continued to shuffle the deck. I think some guys came back bigger, faster, stronger. Some guys came back more skilled. Some didn't. So really, it's been, everyone I've kind of spoken to, I've said it's more or less just a work in progress. And that's even been through our first couple games. So our first four games, we've really had some mixing and matching throughout our lineup. We've continued to move some guys around, whether it be offensive midfield, transition mid, D mid, some different starting attackmen, some different starting defensemen. So we're thrilled with our depth, but we're still working through it. You know, we've got, as I've kind of termed it, like an older group age-wise and cultural experiences in terms of understanding our program, but very young game experience-wise. I think Slusher was quoted in an article last weekend, you know, after just completing his ninth collegiate lacrosse game as a junior in college. So that's just kind of a little bit about where we are.
Sure. The culture at Princeton, you and your coaching staff. I mean, obviously, when you think Princeton lacrosse, you think of Bill Tierney and the national championships and the amazing players that have come through. You and your staff, what is a culture like under your staff, and what are the expectations of a Princeton Tiger?
Sure. Well, first, the guys standing to the right and left of me in terms of Jim Mitchell and Jeremy Hirsch and Drew Cottrell, our ops guy, and Chris Islanian, you know, our volunteer assistant, you know, those guys they're home run lacrosse coaches and home run people. And I think that's kind of how we've approached our entire program from the recruiting all the way up is we really want to enjoy this thing. We love coaching lacrosse, but we really want to do it around great, hardworking people. I think what kind of defines the Princeton way and what we talk about a lot in our program is just being really tough minded, you know, and really understanding that, you know, this experience may be more challenging than other offers that you may have earned, whether it be academically or workload or, you know, some of the NCAA restrictions about practice time and stuff like that. But really high capacity individuals. And we just, you know, we're really not going to make excuses. We're all still playing for the same trophy. So it's just a really impressive group of guys, high capacity guys. That are eager to learn. They're eager to be great teammates. They're eager to try to create a great tight-knit team. And I think that's something that I've been so fond of in my career and just been so lucky to be on some great teams, truly great teams. And those great teams, not only they might not have won championships, but just incredible experiences. So that's what we really try to create here is just, is foster a really, you know, just a really supportive culture for our guys, a really honest and transparent culture. You know, as a younger coaching staff, we're really not trying to fluff these guys. We're trying to be really honest with them, give them direct feedback and help them get better on and off the field. And I think it's starting to work for us. I mean, we've got a great locker room of guys and we got a group of guys that really understand what we term kind of like the culture of extras in our program. You know, and that's just the ability to work outside the margins and really hone your craft in and get better and cherish the 4 years you have to really attack it and be the best Princeton lacrosse player you could possibly be.
Speaking of just legendary coaches, Chris Saylor, women's coach at Princeton University. This is her final season. 2022 is her last campaign. How would you best describe the relationship between the men's and the women's program?
You know, coming from my Division III background, it was so supportive amongst staffs and in those Division III athletic departments, you got to pool resources and whatever it may be. And, you know, coming over to Princeton, I think it really feels very similar. It's an incredible athletic department. It's very supportive. It's a lot of camaraderie amongst teams and coaches, but men's and women's lacrosse programs are naturally kind of tied at the hip. And we're actually under one kind of Friends of Princeton Lacrosse alumni organization and group. So it does match us up together. So yeah, we try to kind of learn as much from Coach Saylor as we possibly can. She runs one heck of a program.
So Coach, going into the season, despite the Tigers' great success in 2020 and really a team that from a national perspective was dominated by one all-time great Michael Sowers, a lot of your guys are like unheralded, unknown players on a national level. And you even talked about how some of your guys and your coaching staff, like what you expected when they came back in the fall after a year and a half off, some of those roles have changed. How do you sum up your team and now that you're ranked in the top 10, maybe how the rest of the lacrosse world should look at your team?
Sure. I mean, it kind of makes me smile. I mean, look, we really, you know, Michael Sowers was an incredible talent and it was hard not to have your eyes on him when the Princeton Tigers were playing. He was just such an electric player. He would make everyone around him better. And he did control the ball a lot. So now moving forward, You know, we really did come into this season, you know, maybe a little underrated, but really faceless in terms of the guys that are on the team. It is guys that have returned and played significant minutes throughout those seasons, but not having that 2021 year and not having them out on the national stage, it's easy to forget about some of these guys. I mean, they are top recruits. There were some pretty big time Herald recruits, but when it comes down to the Princeton Tigers, you know, look, I want my guys to get the recognition. I want guys to recognize who these guys are, whether it's, you know, Sammy English really stepping up in the midfield, Alex Slusher and Chris Brown on attack, you know, Bo Pettersson and Marquez White kind of anchoring our short stick defensive midfield transition unit. And then obviously you got George Bond, a well-known name, you know, Andrew Song, but then some other guys, you know, Eric Peters, like I think Eric Peters is one of the best goalies, if not the best goalie in the country. And no one talks about him. And every coach we play is like, holy cow, your goal is amazing. And I'm like, hey, we really try to do our best, putting the best product out there. But, you know, we're really not out there promoting our guys. We really just kind of let the play speak for itself. So hopefully these guys do become a little more recognizable. But as for in-house in the program, no one cares. No one cares who scores. No one cares who's getting written up in the articles. No one wants the interview. They just want the W at the end of the day. So it's a really refreshing group, but selfishly as the head coach, we'd love for these guys to get some recognition.
We know how it feels when people don't want to be interviewed. No one likes to be interviewed by us pretty much, coach. So thank you for joining us again. You guys are at 3-1 and you open the season against Monmouth and Binghamton, some final score, looking at the final score, some comfortable wins potentially. Then you go into Maryland and you play the Terps. And lose that game 15-10. But then you turn around, minus George Bond in D.C. last weekend, and knock off a very, very good Georgetown Hoya team. How would you best describe those first four games and what you've taken from each collectively?
Sure. Absolutely a learning process. Again, like some fortuitous scheduling in terms of, you know, being able to open up with Monmouth and then turn around with Binghamton and understand that, you know, if we do things the right way and play our systems well, that we have a good opportunity of being successful in those days. And then, and really, you know, starting the Ivy League season on February 1st, we really try, ever since I became head coach, I've tried to go Saturday, Tuesday, right off the bat and just get games under the belt. It's too long Saturday to Saturday. I love the quick turnaround. I don't mind playing two, three games a week. I love it for our guys. But really, for us as a coaching staff, it was just a learning process, figure out who we are, get subbing back on and off the field, get playing at the proper pace. And then going into Maryland, you know, look, that's the standard. Their consistency is incredible. So we knew we wanted to play one of those top teams as early as possible. We had Virginia and Hop on the schedule with some schedule changes and the ACC shuffle. We ended up losing those games. So to be able to replace them with Maryland or Georgetown was a great win for our program. How those games fared going into it, you know, we just wanted to learn about ourselves and really get better. And we went down to the Maryland game with no face-off unit. We got our face-off guy back the day of out of the COVID protocol. So we kind of knew we were facing a little adversity, down a guy that we knew we may need to rely on. So I think that kind of helped as we moved into Georgetown, where we kind of realized later in the week that George Bond may not be playing. I think our guys didn't really bat an eye. They kind of really embraced the next man up mentality as they did the week before. And guys are really ready to step into the role and play. So we were really lucky that, you know, a young guy like Colin Molshine as a freshman got his first start, and Coulter Maxey, both those guys got their first start against Georgetown. Both played pretty well for what we were asking them to do. So again, very good performances for some young guys. But as far as our team, like really, we're just trying to look, we're trying to win or lose. We're trying to learn and get better, and very fortunate that we're able to, you know, that we're able to be 3-1 right now.
Coach, you just talked about two top five matchups that you've played the last 2 weeks. Your schedule does not get any easier. You have number three Rutgers this week, and then you enter the Ivy League schedule the next 2 weeks against Penn and Yale. But let's talk about the Scarlet Knights and the Tots Maestro Cup on the line this weekend. What have you seen from Rutgers so far early in the season as you prepare for the game?
Coach Brack's done an incredible job with that program. I mean, they play every aspect of, they play every facet of the game. They attack you off the faceoff. They attack you in the ride and clear. They attack you in their NASCAR package, you know, their early offense. They've got great pieces offensively, speed, size, strength, IQ. and they've got some good experience defensively, and then they have an outstanding goalie, another guy that might be one of the best, if not the best goalies in the country, and an outstanding, Kurse does an unbelievable job kind of sparking their transition in terms of getting the ball up and out and making clean saves. So it's a really complete team. There's no doubt it's a top five team in the country as far as our coaching staff and what they think. We are not taking this group lightly at all. We know the punch and the power they can bring. So we're trying to prepare our guys as best we can. I mean, Shane Knobloch might be one of the best midfielders we faced up to this point. So Rutgers is really impressive. They really do. They're one heck of a program. They're strong all over the field. They're experienced as they had a great season last year. They were, what, a goal away from a Final Four. It's a team that has not lost in a really long time. So this is a powerhouse program. This is going to be one of the best, if not the best, Rutgers teams we've ever faced.
Coach, you've been playing Rutgers. Princeton and Rutgers have been going at it since 1922. What does this game mean for both schools and, more importantly, perhaps the state of New Jersey and lacrosse?
You know, I appreciate you asking. It's huge for the state of New Jersey. You know, Coach Brecht and I, for years, have talked about kind of joining forces, regardless of whether it be at Princeton or Rutgers, and making it the New Jersey high school game, you know, really trying to get those crowds in, those teams in, those group tickets in, just to really create an environment and kind of showcase what two great programs at the Division I level can do. So this is really a big game. I mean, outside of it being a trophy game, and everyone loves playing for trophies, so that'll kind of bring an extra little fire to the game. But it should be a great one. And I know, you know, it's gone back and forth in terms of every flip-flop, who's hosting it every year. But this is a great turnout. I think almost 1,200 to 2,000 pre-sale tickets from groups. So it should be a really big-time event. And, you know, honestly, I know in the last decade or so, as far as I've been at Princeton, this has been one heck of a battle. Very, very tight games. Both, you know, could go either way. So this should be a big one on Saturday.
Last one for you, Coach, before we let you get out of here. So in years past, we've asked coaches about your favorite road trip restaurant. And you can answer that one if you'd like to. You know, when Princeton goes on the road, where do you like to take the guys? But the question we're asking for 2022, especially still in, but hopefully coming out of the pandemic, are you a music guy or like a TV guy? And either way, what are you listening to or what are you watching currently?
I'll answer all. So the road trip, again, no favorite spot, but, you know, our guys, it's so funny. Just, you know, when they get that itch to get on the bus and they get their first chicken parm meal, it's just such a staple here at Princeton. I think it's a staple in all of college athletics, but I don't have a particular spot. I'd have to check back on that one. As far as TV and music, in season, more music than TV. And I listened to a little bit of everything from Grateful Dead to Fish to rap to Wu-Tang to Biggie, all of it, you know. And then my wife does a good job kind of infiltrating my pop music as well. But yeah, I think anytime I can steal with Ashley, my wife, and we can watch some TV shows at night, we've kind of just knocked off Yellowstone, which I thought was awesome. But I think that's our most recent one. I actually stole over COVID. I did have some time outside of trying to become a lacrosse fan and not watch every game so critically. I did watch some Peaky Blinders, which I very much enjoyed.
Peaky Blinders. That's a great show.
Great show.
Have you had Tracy Gianfrancaro's lasagna yet?
No, I haven't.
It's amazing. I'll make sure she sends one home.
They're awesome people. We're lucky to have those guys in the program.
She's a great cook.
Oh, I can't wait. We'll put her on the spot now. That's outstanding.
Did she make you a lasagna, Dixie?
Yeah, I think she made me a lasagna and an eggplant parm. I've had two Tracy D.
Good. I can't wait to bridge this conversation and earn some of my own trays of food. So that's huge.
We want to thank Coach Malone for his time on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast. Best of luck to you and the Tigers this week and throughout the season. And you're welcome back anytime.
Thank you very much for having me on. Appreciate it.
Prince has gotten rolling a little bit, Dix.
Yeah.
The media darlings this week, if you didn't catch their assistant coaches, Jeremy Hirsch and Jim Mitchell with Pete Poyon and Matt Bocklet on the Wednesday IL podcast. You should go back and listen to it. That's a good conversation. Then we have Madeline on this week.
And that was not by design. That was simply one podcast not communicating with another, I guess. Not that it's a bad thing.
It's that leadership at IL that I blame Matt Kinnear. It's all Matt Kinnear's fault. He's got to help coordinate us a little bit because you line up these interviews separately and you don't know. But anyway, a great conversation.
Yeah. And a good lacrosse team. And again, one that really learned a lot from their loss to Maryland. And Coach Madeline shared that he was missing some pieces against the Terps and they were in play against Georgetown. But I mean, to go into DC, minus your best defender and pull off that upset, that's impressive. And you're a gigantic English.
Sam English. He's my second favorite player on the team. And
who's your first?
This kid who plays goalie for them.
Oh, yeah.
Sammy had 4 goals against Maryland, 3 goals against Georgetown. He's a first, second team All-American type talent. Super athletic. He plays all over the field. Like, you know, he plays defensive midfield. You might see him on the wing on faceoffs, and he's a mismatch on offense. You know, if you have to put a pole on him, there were times when Georgetown had Will Bowen on him. They brought up a close defenseman to cover Sam English. That's the kind of difference maker he is. You know, he reminds me of one of my all-time favorites, Matt Abbott. He's okay. Like that type of a midfielder, like just does everything. He just makes winning plays on both ends of the field for your team. And can't say enough about him.
Yeah. I don't think Matt Abbott, though, would ever draw a defensive assignment like a Will Bowen, though. That might be a difference between the two.
Yeah. I mean, it's a
– But Abbott, Abbott's one of my favorite players of all time. Did everything.
But back-to-back games where against Maryland and Georgetown where you put up 7 goals from the midfield – against those two teams, that's
doing something right.
Impressive stuff. So this game, we love Rutgers too. We like Rutgers' pace. We like their ability to score. And this is going to be a fun game.
They have been living dangerously. You know, when you talk about one goal wins, the pessimistic side of you says, oh, but we're only beating teams by one goal. But then the optimist side of you, well, they know how to win close games. They know how to win competitive games. And this past weekend over Stony Brook up on Long Island was no different, outlasting the Seawolves. So this is a team that's battle-tested. They're veteran. It was great. A couple weeks ago when Matt Kinnear stepped in, you guys were previewing, I think it might have been Rutgers Loyola. And Matt Kinnear's like, yeah, you know, everybody thinks that Rutgers has a bunch of transfers and that's the makeup of their team. And well, you know, their transfers are top 4 scorers. So it reminded me of the Chappelle Show sketch, the Rick James sketch, when Chappelle is Rick James talking about, you know, when he grinding his feet into the couch of Eddie Murphy. And he's like, that's crazy. I ain't never ground my feet into Eddie Murphy's couch. And then, yeah, I remember this one time I ground my feet in Eddie Murphy's couch. You know, him talking about the transfers. But, you know, look, this is a team – Coach Madelon mentioned Shane Knobloch, mentioned Colin Kirst. You know, their defensive middies seem like they've been there forever. Tommy Coyne and Brennan Kamish, and, you know, Mitch Bartolo, the new, the transfer from Penn is a handful. Ross Scott, I watched him in person along with the rest of Rutgers a couple weeks ago against Loyola. He was a handful. So very, very talented team. And this is probably what? Yeah, this is the Tots Meistel Cup. This is the marquee matchup of the weekend, I have to say.
There are some big games on Sunday too, Dix. So I would say this is the top matchup of the weekend, something to focus on. But Sunday, Yale travels out to take on Denver. Number 14, Yale Bulldogs at number 20, Denver. Games at 1:00.
Yale, big win this past weekend over UMass in overtime. Found a way to beat the Minutemen. Matt Brandau scored the game winner. And then Denver, you know, they may have lost to North Carolina last weekend, but at one point I think they were down by 5 or 6 goals in Chapel Hill and just battled back. So hats off to the Pioneers. This will be a great game. Jack Han has found a stroke, ladies and gentlemen. He has found a way to score goals. This game will come down to what team can play better, team defense, I think, because both have very potent offenses.
And finally, number 17, Syracuse at Homewood Field taking on the Johns Hopkins Blue Jays at 4 o'clock in Dave Cutramala's return to Homewood Field.
Yeah, don't forget Saturday, too. I'll give a plug. Duke travels to Loyola at Ridley, 4 o'clock Saturday afternoon. Weather is supposed to be an issue up and down the Eastern Seaboard this weekend, so we'll see how it affects play. Rutgers-Princeton, they're anticipating some nasty weather up north. I know the forecast for the Loyola-Duke game isn't the best. And what will things look like on Sunday in Dave Petromala's return to Homewood Field? Now, I'm going to give you the floor for a minute. If you want it, your nose is really out of shape this week with Hopkins being unranked and Syracuse being ranked. Do you want to address that or do you want to keep it between us?
I'll address it. You know, Syracuse is 2-3. Hopkins is 3-3. Syracuse has beaten two teams that are not in the top 20 and have not been in the top 20. Hopkins beaten Jacksonville, who's, you know, was in the top 10 last week. Not when they beat them, but they've solidified their bona fides as a top 20 team. And they beat Loyola when the Greyhounds were ranked in the top 10, I think. So that's two significant wins for the Blue Jays. And they also beat a tough Towson team on the road. And Hopkins has lost to Georgetown. And Hopkins has lost to North Carolina and Virginia. Teams in the top 10. So if you just weigh wins and losses, Hopkins has a few good wins. And they have lost to teams that are in the top 10. And then you look at Syracuse. I don't understand how Syracuse is ranked ahead of the Blue Jays. That's all I'm saying. It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to me. I also said something about, you know, Princeton's rank. Like Penn's ranked ahead of Georgetown and Princeton. And Princeton beat Georgetown, who beat Penn. Penn's one significant win seems to be over Duke, who's ranked number 9 this week. So how is a win over the team ranked number 9 keep you so highly ranked when two teams that seem to be better than you are ranked below you? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But, again, it's just a ranking.
Right.
It's barely – March has just started. There's a lot of lacrosse left to play, and it'll sort itself out. And really all you've got to do is make it into the NCAA tournament so that you can settle it yourselves on the field come May. But this weekend at Homewood Field, this is a significant game for Hopkins fans and Syracuse fans, and I can't wait to watch it.
And so, again, you made some great points about the rankings, and we talk about it a lot in this space. They are what they are. And they're really for – it's fun to have a conversation like, you know, if we were – the conversation we had prior to recording this around the rankings. They don't mean a whole lot, you know. It's more just some Monday morning. It's some entertainment for people that like to follow Inside Lacrosse, and could be some fodder to have some good conversations, good dialogue, good back and forth, comparing resumes and all that other kind of thing. But, yeah, it's still early in the season, and we'll see how things shake out. Syracuse Hopkins, other than Dave Petromala returning to Homewood Field, has there ever been any, like, perhaps less fanfare for Hopkins versus Syracuse?
I can't remember it.
Yeah. Two teams that are, you know, they're good, not great, not a ton of expectations from the realistic fan base. You know, maybe some folks that are that you know, don't really get it, think they should be better. So it's going to be interesting. What will the emotion be like on Sunday for the Hopkins faithful seeing Dave Petromala wearing orange and blue on the other sideline? Really, I think for the first time ever. I don't think he's ever coached a collegiate game when he was assistant at Loyola Penn, then a head coach at Cornell. I don't think they ever played at Homewood Field. So this, I think, will be the first time ever that Dave Petromala is on that visitor sideline. It's going to be weird. And, you know, look, you got a Hopkins team looking to turn things around after being competitive with North Carolina for a quarter and a half. And then they got handled and then, you know, really got blown out last weekend down in Charlottesville against the University of Virginia. You know, can Syracuse go deeper than Brendan Curry and Tucker Dordovic, you know, in terms of consistent offensive production? Can Hopkins find an identity on offense, I think, is a big question for a lot of the fans out there. It'll be an entertaining game. Whenever Hopkins and Syracuse get together, it's always entertaining. But, you know, other than the Dave Petromala storyline, I'm not so sure that there's a whole lot of other intrigue for a lot of fans out there, Hopkins and Syracuse, for the first time in a long time.
Let's talk about something that does have a lot of intrigue and excitement, Dix. Inside Lacrosse has a new feature, Fantasy Lacrosse, made for the fans. It'll keep games like this. You pick a Hopkins or a Syracuse guy, and then you're following the action. Allows fans to tune in. Explain how this works, because you're kind of new to this. You don't do fantasy football or anything like that, do you?
Of course I do fantasy football.
Oh, okay. So you kind of get how it works.
My one team year after year is named Catalina Wine Mixer. Okay. That's my one team. And then like this year, I can't remember what my team was in the other league. I'm in two leagues. And the one league, I keep my team Catalina Wine Mixer every year. And then the other league, I change my name on an annual basis.
Okay. So that'll make sense to you. So if you haven't checked it out, it's free to play. All you need to do is sign up. And there's games every day. So there was a Thursday, Friday mix of games that you could play on Friday. And then there's one for this Saturday with a number of games. And you have an $18 budget. Players are ranked from $1 to $5. And you just pick a guy at each position. You can't exceed $18. And you can only take one guy at each position. So if there's six spots, an attackman, a midfielder, defense, faceoff, goalie, and then you get a flex player. You can only take one guy in each of those categories, and you mix and match to get your $18 budget. So here's my team of the week, Dix. You want to hear this?
I do.
Okay, so for Saturday's games, there's a number of options at the $5 level. The only one I took was my flex guy, Brandon Nickturn, for $5. My attackman is Alex Slusher, Princeton. He's a dollar. It's a steal. Alex Slusher for $1. He had $5.
Wow. He's been putting up huge numbers.
He had 5 goals last week against Georgetown, playing their vaunted defense and first-team All-American goalie. For $1, I think that's a steal. My $2 guy, or my midfielder, is Andrew McAdory from Duke. He's at $2.
Why would you take him? Well, I mean, why you take – they're playing Loyola this week. Why would you do that to me?
I need a midfielder, and you got to work it into your budget. You know,
I got you.
And I don't pick them in order. I kind of go like, you know, this guy He looks like he's a good deal.
That just hurts that you're going to be rooting against the Greyhounds this weekend.
Not necessarily. I just want McAdory to score all the Duke goals. And then
Understood.
For your sake, Loyola can win the game. But I want McAdory to score all the goals. Conlin is my faceoff guy from Stony Brook. He's a $3 special this week. I've got Ben Finley, a defenseman from Princeton, for $2. Again, he's a steal watching him play. I took Georgetown first team All-American goalie for $4 this week, Owen McElroy. He's my goalie, and then my flex guy is Nick Turn. I still had $1 left over. I had $1 left over in my budget. Not only do you pick the players you like, but you kind of got to look for matchups. So, you know,
right.
I think this guy is playing against a really good team, you know, maybe, or what his individual matchup might be in that game. So that's my squad. I've got, again, Slusher, McAdory, Conlin, Finley, McElroy, and Nick Turner. And I think I'm going to win it this week. And then you play against everybody else who plays. So did you pick a team this week?
I have not. I'll have to go in there and look at it. So explain this to me. You get $18 for a week.
For an individual game. So this
for an individual
is,
like game. A, so you can play as like many a, games as you want?
You think of it as like a daily fantasy game.
Okay.
So there's women's games. That, I think they even do some D3 games. So this is a single event, let's put it that way. Saturday's games, and then they have basically guys from Princeton, Rutgers, Notre Dame, Maryland, Stony Brook, Loyola, Duke, Penn State, Georgetown. They don't take it's not every player in Division I that's playing on Saturday available. It's a finite list of guys from a certain set of games that are available, and then you can pick and choose who you like within your budget. Highly recommend it. It's lots of fun, and it'll make the game more interesting. All right, Dix. Now here is my give and go this week. Worst water cooler talk. After all that I just said about how great fantasy is there anything that people hate hearing around the water cooler more than people talk about their fantasy teams? I don't think so. So I made a list of things people hate, like your work coworkers hate you talking about. And I'm going to list them. Pets. Nobody really cares about your pets. Nobody cares if you're talking to like a young guy, if you got a guy on your staff who's like 22, like a bro, don't talk about your kids with him. He does not care about you and your kids and what you did and what they're up to. The other thing, gambling winning. No one cares that you had this amazing parlay where you had this team at minus 6 points and this team, like no one cares. Or how you won some money playing blackjack. Nobody cares about that. Those are my top four items. Fantasy team, gambling wins, kid talk when people don't have kids, and pet talk. What are your tops?
This
or do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, this will probably be pretty easy. How much you drank if you're over 25 years old. And you know, look, I'm 50 now, so maybe I'm being too draconian on the age limit, but no one really cares how much you drink, especially if you're around my age. No one cares. The glory days, the Al Bundy, you know, when you scored four touchdowns in the sectional high school football game, you know, 30 years ago, no one really cares. Especially, and most of the people that talk like that are trying to one up other people that are like real athletes or something like that. So that's two. Glory days and, you know, how much you drank. I think the other thing is, and this, you know, and all baked into this is like the language that you use. Like if you're over 30 years old and you're still saying things are sick, you know, you probably want to reexamine your vocabulary. Probably if you're obnoxious, bragging about your kids, that's tough. And then also like how much money you make or how much money you spent on something that could get a little out of there. I will tell you, I mean, you know, high school lacrosse season is taking off and I've been to a couple scrimmages and then my son Owen had his first game. Listening, and this isn't necessarily water cooler, but other parents yelling at the other team. Like we had a situation where a parent from the other team was yelling no class at my son's team late in the game. I thought that was way out of line and way out of bounds. And then you always have those one or two dads, and it's typically a dad that handicap other leagues, you know. So
what do you mean?
Like, you know, so my son plays for Loyola, so they're in the MIAA. When you talk about the other leagues around the area, like whether it's the Washington Catholic League or the IAC or, you know, the MPSSAA, the public schools, you know, it's, well, you know, if they played in that league, they'd be like the fourth or fifth team. They would be the, and I was like, dude, I don't even know how many teams are in the damn conference, nor do I know who's in the conf. Like, really? Yeah. Like, it's just these pontificators, you know, you just want to turn around and be like, dude, like, you know, stop. Yeah. So those are, I mean, a way to bring me down. I was actually in like a pretty upbeat mood. Now you like want me to talk about things I don't like. So those are some things. Yeah.
All right, so what are the best things to talk to coworkers about?
If you do it in the right way, your kids.
Your vacation.
Your family, your vacation.
What you ate at a restaurant.
A great meal, a great time with friends, you know. But it's, you know, you talk about those moments and you talk about, like, you know, the significant things. You know, if I'm going to tell you about a restaurant I went to, I'm not going to tell you about the, you know, six Irish car bombs that I drank and that I was so whacked that my Uber driver kicked me out or, you know, stuff like that. I'm going to tell you like what I ate, the food, the vibe, and the, you know, the company I was with, all that good stuff.
Okay. All right.
I don't know. What do you, I mean, you tell me. Sounds Am I being like, too harsh?
No, it sounds like a good place to stop. We'd like to thank our guest this week, Princeton head coach, Matt Madelon. Best of luck to him and the Tigers this week and throughout the season. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. It costs you nothing to do that. It's simple and it allows other people to find us and makes the podcast available to them. Tell a friend, share the love. It's free. We always love to hear from you, so give us a shout out on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse, and I'm simply at D_FLY at DFLY. Remember, stay positive, test negative, and as always, enjoy the games.